Chapter 25. Max alerted me when Shoto arrived an hour or so later. I granted his ship clearance to enter Falco's airspace and told him to park in my hangar. Shoto's vessel was a large interplanetary trawler named the Kurosawa, modeled after a ship called the Bebop in the classic anime series Cowboy Bebop. Daito and Shoto had used it as their mobile base of operations for as long as I'd known them. The ship was so big that it barely fit through my hangar doors. I was standing on the runway to greet Shoto as he emerged from the Kurosawa. He was dressed in black mourning robes, and his face bore the same inconsolable expression I'd seen when we spoke on the phone. "Parzival-san," he said, bowing low. "Shoto-san." I returned the bow respectfully, then stretched out my palm, a gesture he recognized from the time we'd spent questing together. Grinning, he reached out and slipped me some skin. But then, his dark expression immediately resurfaced. This was the first time I'd seen Shoto since the quest we'd shared on Takosatsu, not counting those Daisho energy drink commercials he and his brother appeared in, and his avatar seemed to be a few inches taller than I remembered. I led him up to one of my stronghold's rarely used sitting rooms, a recreation of the living room set from Family Ties. Shoto recognized the decor and nodded his silent approval. Then, ignoring the furniture, he seated himself in the center of the floor. He sat Saiza style, folding his legs under his thighs. I did the same, positioning myself so that our avatars faced each other. We sat in silence for a while. When Shoto was finally ready to speak, he kept his eyes on the floor. "The Sixers killed my brother last night," he said, almost whispering. At first, I was too stunned to reply. "You mean they killed his avatar?" I asked, even though I could already tell that wasn't what he meant. Shoto shook his head. "No. They broke into his apartment, pulled him out of his haptic chair, and threw him off his balcony. He lived on the 43rd floor." Shoto opened a browser window in the air beside us. It displayed a Japanese newsfeed article. I tapped it with my index finger, and the Mandarax software translated the text to English. The headline was, "Another Otaku Suicide." The brief article below said that a young man, Toshiro Yoshiaki, age 22, had jumped to his death from his apartment, located on the 43rd floor of a converted hotel in Shinjuku, Tokyo, where he lived alone. I saw a school photo of Toshiro beside the article. He was a young Japanese man with long, unkempt hair and bad skin. He didn't look anything like his Oasis avatar. When Shoto saw that I'd finished reading, he closed the window. I hesitated for a moment before asking, "Are you sure he didn't really commit suicide? Because his avatar had been killed?" "No," Shoto said. "Daito did not commit seppuku. I'm sure of it. The Sixers broke into his apartment while we were engaged in combat with them on Frobas. That's how they were able to defeat his avatar, by killing him in the real world." "I'm sorry, Shoto." I didn't know what else to say. I knew he was telling the truth. "My real name is Akihide," he said. "I want you to know my true name." I smiled, then bowed, briefly pressing my forehead to the floor. "I appreciate your trusting me with your true name," I said. "My true name is Wade." I could no longer see the point in keeping secrets. "Thank you, Wade," Shoto said, returning the bow. "You're welcome, Akihide." He was silent for a moment. Then he cleared his throat and began to talk about Daito. The words poured out of him. It was obvious he needed to talk to someone about what had happened, about what he'd lost. "Daito's real name was Toshiro Yoshiaki. I didn't even know that until last night, until I saw the news article." "But I thought you were his brother," I'd always assumed that Daito and Shoto lived together, that they shared an apartment or something. My relationship with Daito is difficult to explain. He stopped to clear his throat. We were not brothers, not in real life, just in the oasis. Do you understand? We only knew each other online. I never actually met him. He slowly raised his eyes to meet my gaze, to see if I was judging him. I reached out and rested a hand on his shoulder. Believe me, Shoto, I understand. H and Artemis are my two best friends, and I've never met either of them in real life either. In fact, you are one of my closest friends, too. He bowed his head. Thank you. I could tell by his voice that he was crying now. We're Gunters, I said, trying to fill the awkward silence. We live here, in the oasis. For us, this is the only reality that has any meaning. Akihide nodded. A few moments later, he continued to talk. He told me how he and Toshiro had met 6 years ago, when they were both enrolled in an oasis support group for hikikomori, young people who had withdrawn from society and chosen to live in total isolation. Hikikomori locked themselves in a room, read manga, and cruised the oasis all day, relying on their families to bring them food. There had been hikikomori in Japan since back before the turn of the century, but their number had skyrocketed after the hunt for Halliday's Easter egg began. Millions of young men and women all over the country had locked themselves away from the world. They sometimes called these children the missing millions. Akihide and Toshiro became best friends and spent almost every day hanging out together in the oasis. When the hunt for Halliday's Easter egg began, they'd immediately decided to join forces and search for it together. They made a perfect team because Toshiro was a prodigy at video games, while the much younger Akihide was well-versed in American pop culture. Akihide's grandmother had attended school in the United States, and both of his parents had been born there, so Akihide had been raised on American movies and television, and he'd grown up learning to speak English and Japanese equally well. Akihide and Toshiro's mutual love of samurai movies served as the inspiration for their avatars' names and appearances. Shoto and Daito had grown so close that they were now like brothers. So when they created their new Gunter identities, they decided that, in the oasis, they were brothers from that moment on. After Shoto and Daito cleared the first gate and became famous, they gave several interviews with the media. They kept their identities a secret, but they did reveal that they were both Japanese, which made them instant celebrities in Japan. They began to endorse Japanese products and had a cartoon and a live-action TV series based on their exploits. At the height of their fame, Shoto had suggested to Daito that perhaps it was time for them to meet in person. Daito had flown into a rage and stopped speaking to Shoto for several days. After that, Shoto had never suggested it again. Eventually, Shoto worked his way up to telling me how Daito's avatar had died. The two of them had been aboard the Kurosawa, cruising between planets in Sector 7 when the scoreboard informed them that H had obtained the Jade Key. When that happened, they knew the Sixers would use Findoro's Tablet of Finding to pinpoint H's exact location and that their ships would soon be converging on it. In preparation for this, Daito and Shoto had spent the past few weeks planting microscopic tracking devices on the hulls of every Sixer gunship they could find. Using these devices, they were able to follow the gunships when they all abruptly changed course and headed for Froboz. As soon as Shoto and Daito learned that Froboz was the Sixers' destination, they'd easily deciphered the meaning of the quatrain. And by the time they reached Froboz, just a few minutes later, they'd already figured out what they needed to do to obtain the Jade Key. They landed the Kurosawa next to an instance of the White House that was still deserted. Shoto ran inside to collect the 19 treasures and get the key, while Daito remained outside to stand guard. Shoto worked quickly, and he only had 2 treasures left to collect when Daito informed him by comlink that 10 Sixer gunships were closing in on their location. He told his brother to hurry and promised to hold off the enemy until Shoto had the jade key. Neither of them knew if they'd have another chance to reach it. As Shoto scrambled to get the last two treasures and place them in the trophy case, he remotely activated one of the Kurosawa's external cameras and used it to record a short video of Daito's confrontation with the approaching Sixers. Shoto opened a window and played this video clip for me, but he averted his eyes until it was over. He obviously had no desire to watch it again. On the vid feed, I saw Daito standing alone in the field beside the White House. A small fleet of Sixer gunships was descending out of the sky, and they began to fire their laser cannons as soon as they were within range. A hailstorm of fiery red bolts began to rain down all around Daito. Behind him, in the distance, I could see more Sixer gunships setting down, and each one was offloading squadrons of power-armored ground troops. Daito was surrounded. The Sixers had obviously spotted the Kurosawa during its descent to the planet's surface, and they'd made killing the two samurai a priority. Daito didn't hesitate to use the ace up his sleeve. He pulled out the beta capsule, held it aloft in his right hand, and activated it. His avatar instantly changed into Ultraman, a glowing-eyed, red and silver alien superhero. As his avatar transformed, he also grew to a height of 156 feet. The Sixer ground forces closing in on him froze in their tracks, staring up in frightened awe as Ultraman Daito snatched two gunships out of the sky and smashed them together, like a giant child playing with two tiny metal toys. He dropped the flaming wreckage to the ground and began to swat other Sixer gunships out of the sky like bothersome flies. The ships that escaped his deadly grasp banked around and sprayed him with laser bolts and machine gun fire, but both deflected harmlessly off his armored alien skin. Daito let out a booming laugh that echoed across the landscape. Then he made a cross with his arms, intersecting at the wrists. A glowing energy beam blasted forth from his hands, vaporizing half a dozen gunships unlucky enough to fly through its path. Daito turned and swept the beam over the Sixer ground forces around him, frying them like terrified ants under a magnifying glass. Daito appeared to be enjoying himself immensely, so much so that he paid little attention to the warning light embedded in the center of his chest, which had now begun to flash bright red. This was a signal that his 3 minutes as Ultraman had nearly elapsed and that his power was almost depleted. This time limit was Ultraman's primary weakness. If Daito failed to deactivate the beta capsule and return to human form before his 3 minutes were up, his avatar would die. But it was obvious that if he changed back into his human form right now, in the middle of the massive Sixer onslaught, he'd be killed instantly too. And Shoto would never be able to reach the ship. I could see the Sixer troops around Daito screaming into their comlinks for backup, and additional Sixer gunships were still arriving in droves. Daito was blasting them out of the sky one at a time with perfectly aimed bursts of his specium ray. And, with each blast he fired, the warning light on his chest pulsed faster. Then, Shoto emerged from the White House and told his brother via comlink that he'd acquired the jade key. In that same instant, the Sixer ground forces spotted Shoto, and sensing a much easier target, they began to redirect their fire at his avatar. Shoto made a mad dash for the Kurosawa. When he activated the boots of speed he was wearing, his avatar became a barely visible blur racing across the open field. As Shoto ran, Daito repositioned his giant form to provide him with as much cover as possible. Still firing energy blasts, he was able to keep the Sixers at bay. Then, Daito's voice broke in on the comlink. "Shoto!" he shouted. "I think someone is here. Someone is inside." His voice cut off. At the same moment, his avatar froze as if he'd been turned to stone, and a logout icon appeared directly over his head. Logging out of your Oasis account while you were engaged in combat was the same thing as committing suicide. During the logout sequence, your avatar froze in place for 60 seconds, during which time you were totally defenseless and susceptible to attack. The logout sequence was designed this way to prevent avatars from using it as an easy way to escape a fight. You had to stand your ground or retreat to a safe location before you could log out. Daito's logout sequence had been engaged at the worst possible moment. As soon as his avatar froze, he began to take heavy laser and gunfire from all directions. The red warning light on his chest began to flash faster and faster until it finally went solid red. When that happened, Daito's giant form fell over and collapsed. As he fell, he barely missed crushing Shoto and the Kurosawa. As he hit the ground, his avatar's body transformed and shrank back to its normal size and appearance. Then, it began to disappear altogether, slowly fading out of existence. When Daito's avatar vanished completely, it left behind a small pile of spinning items on the ground. Everything he'd been carrying in his inventory, including the beta capsule. He was dead. I saw another blur of motion on the vid feed as Shoto ran back to collect Daito's items. Then, he looped around and ran back aboard the Kurosawa. The ship lifted off and blasted into orbit, taking heavy fire the entire way. I was reminded of my own desperate escape from Froboz. Luckily for Shoto, his brother had wiped out most of the Sixer gunships in the vicinity and reinforcements had yet to arrive. Shoto was able to reach orbit and escape by making the jump to light speed, but just barely. The video ended, and Shoto closed the window. "How do you think the Sixers found out where he lived?" I asked. "I don't know," Shoto said. "Daito was careful. He covered his tracks." "If they found him, they might be able to find you, too," I said. "I know. I've taken precautions." "Good." Shoto removed the beta capsule from his inventory and held it out to me. "Daito would have wanted you to have this." I held up a hand. "No, I think you should keep it. You might need it." Shoto shook his head. "I have all of his other items," he said. "I don't need this, and I don't want it." He held the capsule out to me, insistent. I took the artifact and examined it. It was a small metal cylinder, silver and black in color, with a red activation button on its side. Its size and shape reminded me of the lightsabers I owned. But lightsabers were a dime a dozen. I had over 50 in my collection. There was only one beta capsule, and it was a far more powerful weapon. I raised the capsule with both hands and bowed. "Thank you, Shoto-san." "Thank you, Parzival," he said, returning the bow. "Thank you for listening." He stood up slowly. Everything about his body language seemed to signal defeat. "You haven't given up yet, have you?" I asked. "Of course not." He straightened his body and gave me a dark smile. "But finding the egg is no longer my goal. Now I have a new quest, a far more important one. And that is revenge." I nodded. Then I walked over and took down one of the samurai swords mounted on the wall and presented it to Shoto. "Please," I said, "accept this gift to aid you in your new quest." Shoto took the sword and drew its ornate blade a few inches from the scabbard. "A Masamune?" he asked, staring at the blade in wonder. I nodded. "Yes. And it's a +5 Vorpal blade, too." Shoto bowed again to show his gratitude. "Arigato." We rode the elevator back down to my hangar in silence. Just before he boarded his ship, Shoto turned to me. "How long do you think it will take the Sixers to clear the third gate?" he asked. "I don't know," I said. "Hopefully long enough for us to catch up with them." "It's not over until the fat lady is singing, right?" I nodded. "It's not over until it's over. And it's not over yet."